Okay, well, we might make a start for our final session today. Thank you, everyone, for being a part of the LAMS conference once again. It's been great to see so many of you here. I've got a sort of a formal talk where I'll talk about some issues about giving advice, but there's a few thank yous and updates about LAMS that I'll do first. So let me sort of just get into those. Firstly, I tend to always leave the thank yous to the end and they're always so rushed, so let me do them properly to start with. Firstly, to Liz Masterman and all her colleagues at Oxford who've helped to organise this conference. I've really appreciated all the help, and I know Leanne, who's done so much of the organising, is a patient. So thank you very much for that, Liz. And also to Liz and Diana for their keynotes today. Thank you for that. Leanne and my assistant Renee Vance back in Australia did the most phenomenal job behind the scenes organising everything for the conference, so I'd really like to acknowledge them. And also to Sarah Knight, and on behalf of JISC, for sponsoring the conference. And you may have seen Sarah had a great selection of JISC materials out there, and you know, I think you're welcome to any of those that you'd like, so thank you to the JISC for that. Any of you who've had contact with the LAMS technical team will know that Ernie Giglioni and others who work on that do an amazing job developing the software, providing support and so on. So I'd like to acknowledge the great help that they provide. And finally, Chris, there you are, sorry. I'm not sure if all of you know, but Chris has managed to have his university, the University of Nicosia in Cyprus, to publish the first book on LAMS research, based on some of the previous conference presentations from earlier conferences and other work. And he has kindly donated copies for any of you who are interested to have one of these today. So maybe, Chris, if you can give me a hand handing these around.
There's a new call coming out this year, so hopefully you'll have another book in 2011. So anyone who'd like to submit a paper in the area of LAMS and learning design, please contact me and I'll send you the call.
Anyone missed out on one, or if you had a colleague who would be desperate, we've got some spare ones there. So, Chris, thank you for that. That was an awful lot of work putting that together and reviewing and having your university support that, so really appreciate that. So, the next thing I'd like to talk about is just some of the recent work on LAMS, and by recent, I mean about 10:30 a.m. this morning I got the text message to say that the thing I'm about to demonstrate for you had just gotten up and running and was ready to work. It's sort of a work in progress. Not every bit of it is yet fully polished, but I think it's some quite exciting work that we've been up to, so I did want to show that as part of this conference. And so I'm going to talk about a new website that we have we're calling Lesson LAMS, which is a kind of hosted version of LAMS. If you're sort of familiar with things that run in the cloud, it's like that, where anyone can go and sign up to LAMS and immediately get an account to use LAMS, but can also get it for up to 30 students to be able to run sequences with their students without any cost. So it's an attempt to provide a sort of a trial environment to help people get up and running with LAMS. And we've made some changes to the way the interface works to try and make it a bit easier to get started with LAMS. So I'll show you that in a second. I hope that'll be of some interest. Those of you obviously have your own LAMS service and so on. This is not necessary, but yeah, we've had many cases where people said, look, I'd love to just try it and see how it works before I then sort of go further with it. And so we hope that this will provide a new way to do that. And then sort of going one step further with this, we've then had some work recently with the Open University, and particularly with Rebecca and her colleagues, to develop what we've sort of call an embed function for a LAMS sequence. So if you know YouTube and how you can watch a video on YouTube, but you can also get a little bit of code called the embed code, and you can put it on another web page so you can embed the video straight into that other page. So maybe if you had a blog and you wanted to say, look at this bit of video, and then here's what I think about it. You can have that video run within the page. Well, we want to try and do something similar for LAMS. And so the idea would be is that you could embed a sequence into a page, and you would see a little sort of snapshot of how that sequence looks in the authoring environment. And then there would be buttons to allow you to immediately jump into a preview of that sequence from the learner's point of view without any login or any other kind of restriction, like just straight from the page, you'd be able to say, oh yeah, I'd like to see that, bang, and see it immediately. And then also that if you wanted to explore that sequence further, to look at it in authoring, maybe even run it in your own class, you could then open that sequence straight into the Lesson Lambs environment. And so in a matter of sort of about a minute, go from seeing a sequence that looks all interesting to you, have it open in this environment, and then you could start running it with students or editing it and so on. So I'll show you all of that. It's all a bit new, and there's various bits that aren't quite fully working yet, but I hope the idea will be of interest to you. The other thing we've been working on a lot, which we've talked about here in the previous conference, is what we call the Activity Planner, which is sort of our attempt at a version of a pedagogic planner. And I'm going to use that quite a bit in the later part of my talk, so you'll see that a bit later on and where it's up to. But the Activity Planner is also now a new piece of software that people can use sort of above LAMS to help them with selecting effective templates, editing templates, and so on. Let me show you a little bit of this new Lesson LAMS thing. So what I'm going to start with is to be able to embed a sequence into another website, it has to have been shared through the LAMS community, because that's actually where all the features for this are provided. This is only if you're an expert designer who wants to make something available for others for an embed. And so I've gone into the LAMS community. I'm going to do a quick search for a sequence about the brain, because I know it's a good one. There we go. So Your Amazing Brain, great sequence that's been developed by someone in the community. I'm going to click on that. All of this is traditional sort of LAMS community stuff to be able to see all these details. But you can only see this if you have an account on the LAMS community. So you actually have to go and create a password-based account. And the only way you can preview that sequence is from inside the LAMS community, having had that account. So that's what we want to overcome. So we've just put this new button here as of about 6 hours ago. So if I click on embed, it'll provide some code down the bottom here, basically like the YouTube embed code. So I'm just going to copy that, and then it'll allow me to put it into a blog. So if I now go off and try and get a blog to work. Right, so I just set up again only about an hour ago a LAMS blog, so I could demonstrate this, just one of the free blogging tools. And so we'll call this Your Amazing Brain. And that's not this sequence. So the point here is, having posted, you know, sort of a sequence inside a blog post, or for that matter, any other web page, you know, wiki, your website, anything else, you can comment on it, talk about why you think it's important, talk about the theory of it, you know, anything you want to talk about you can do while having it embedded in that page. And so if I get this set up and now I paste that code in and publish the post, and now I go view post. Okay. So using this blog tool, it's got here Your Amazing Brain, my thoughts on the sequence are, and then all the next bit has been provided automatically out of the LAMS community. And so what we're going to do, and we haven't quite got it yet, it's very close, but here would be actual screenshot of that sequence. So you'll be able to see the author environment view of the sequence to look at, and then we can provide information about that sequence, in this case it's some of the metadata from the LAMS community to go with it. I think the most exciting features are then these ones at the bottom here. So I can then click preview and straight off that blog jump straight into a running preview of that sequence. No account needed, no password, no nothing. So that allows us now pretty much any piece of software that runs on the web or anything that is just a web page, you can stick this inside it now and immediately have people looking at sequences, jumping into them and previewing them without running a LAMS server, without worrying out accounts, anything else. So I mean, if you were developing some other kind of learning support environment and that ran over the web, you can now just drop sequences into that and have people be able to look at them without any kind of fancy integration or, you know, detailed work. So So that's one part of it, is the idea that you could do a learner preview without any accounts or whatever. When it comes to actual authoring and running it, then you will need to get an account, but we've tried to make it as quick and easy as we can. So this is the Lesson Lambs website. Again, we're still developing it. We can't even call it the right name. We keep calling it the Lambs Cloud because that's what we started calling it. And so I've never been here before. I don't have an account, at least in this case. So I'm going to sign up for it. And I've got to pop in my details here from account. I'll do one in the name of my son because I've already got an account. Okay, sorry about the picture. That's another thing you've got to fix. But I just pop in basically name, email address, and password. Click sign me up. And it automatically creates an account for me. And what it does is it takes that sequence that I was just looking at and then puts it in the account as my current thing that I'm working on within it. And so here's our new kind of take on authoring for Lesson Lambs. That is, you look at, here's an example where we've actually got the screenshot of that sequence. So you can actually see the picture of the Amazing Brain sequence and how it looks. And then from the bottom, you can just immediately preview it as a learner, jump into the simple editor, I'll explain that later, go to full author, or launch it with your students. So rather than the traditional Lambs approach, if you go to a welcome page, then you go off to authoring, you do some work, you come back, you then go and find the sequence you're working on, you choose it to run it with your students, and then it happens. We've tried to turn it around and say, this is always whatever you're working on most recently, and here are some actions you can do to that sort of straight away. And if you want to switch to a different sequence, then you can just pull that sequence up and work on that. So, again, I could do preview. I showed you that a moment ago. I can go off to full author, which is your traditional Lambs authoring environment. So if, having seen this sequence on someone's blog, had a look at it, you know, from a learner point of view, thought, that's interesting, I'd like to explore that further. You know, it's only taken me, you know, I don't know, a minute or something to create an account, get this far, and now be able to look at it in authoring. And in one sense, it seems like a very small thing, but the number of times we've had complaints from teachers who've said, I can't get my tech guys to set up a Lambs server, or, you know, the firewall's got in the way. Just so many small but unfortunate problems. Well, here we are. I've got the sequence. I can now do anything within authoring with it. I'll close that because I can also then launch it with students. So if I click launch, we've created two new options just for this Lesson Lambs website. And that is, again, rather than the big enterprise, you know, class lists and all those things, this is only designed for just up to 30 students in one class that you look after. So you can set that class up to run two ways. One is you just get a URL for the sequence and you get a code and you give that out to your students. They go to that website, they self-register, so they just put in their own name and their email, and then they're off. Or alternatively, if you would rather register them by hand, you can go to the second option, you put in their name, you put in their email address, and then the system will email out to them saying, here's the sequence with the URL, off you go. So, I mean, either option depending on the context, but, you know, if I go to, I'll go to this one, set it up. So, okay, so I've added a student and I could go through and do my others. And then I just click start lesson, that's it. That's the process of setting it up. So that's all now ready to run. That's the URL that you would give to your students to send it. And we've got an option where you can print it out. So if you were sort of in a computer lab and you needed to have, you know, 30 students, you're going to cut up pieces of paper and say, here's, you know, your URL and your account. You can do it that way. Or you can have the system just email it to the students and then they get an email that says, here's the sequence, here's the URL, off you go. So again, we've had a crack at making it sort of as easy as we reasonably can to get people up and going quickly. If I just go back to home at this point and scroll down, at the bottom of the page we then have a kind of simplified view of the monitoring area. So now what you're seeing is I've just launched that sequence, Your Amazing Brain, when I created it, the URL for it, and then if I click view, it will take me into the traditional sort of Lambs monitoring area with all the features that go with that, so that I can monitor student progress and so on. But we wanted to, again, provide sort of all on one web page, a simple view of sequences you've been working on, stuff you can do to them, edit them and so on, and sequences you're running with your little class of students, and just have a list of those ready to use. Okay. And yeah, you can hide them, delete them and so on. So that's sort of an important step for us. In one sense, it's not all that... we haven't done anything here fancy in terms of learning design technology. You know, when I think of the blood, sweat and tears that those of us who built learning design systems have been through and how hard that is, this is a different kind of thing. This is all just kind of simplification and, you know, sticking it in the cloud and trying to make it easier. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of people, I think, who failed to get going with learning design because it just wasn't quite easy enough. And we all know from, you know, the success of certain Web 2 tools, they can go for a while, not really take off, and then suddenly they get just simple enough and bang, they take off. You know, things like Facebook and MySpace and others. Now, I don't know if this is simple enough, but it's the best we could do so far in terms of trying to sort of turn lambs on its head and just say, all right, if it was out there and you could just use it and get going, great. We will, over time, we won't do it immediately, but provide an option where if people want to get more classes and more students, there'll be like a pay option for that. So if they pay, we don't know yet, but maybe $30 a month, $20 a month, something like that, then you can get larger classes and so on. But my view would be is there comes a point where if you're doing large-scale work with LAMS, then you go and get a server set up and you run it and so on. This is to help people get going and trying to sort of run their first class and see how that works and get a feel for this area of learning design. Just one other thing briefly for now. I'm going to show you in a moment where we're up to with the activity planner, which is our sort of pedagogic planner. We have in fact linked that into this as well. So this browse sequence button will take you into the LAMS activity planner. And this simple editor is a new type of editor that we've been building in the activity planner, which basically only presents just the key text information for each activity. If you haven't seen before, I'll show you in a few minutes. But we thought, why not? We'll throw it in here as well. So for the teacher who's saying, I've been given a sequence, I'm happy to work with its structure, but I might want to change one website, or I might want to add a little bit of extra instructions, that's what this simple editor allows. But I might as well click on it so you see what it looks like. So rather than the traditional LAMS authoring where you've got all the tools across the page, you have to open up each one to go in, and there's, you know, 10 to 20 settings per tool, basically all of that's been preset for you. The sequence is just running down the page here, and this box will be just the sort of the most important content thing for that particular tool. So if it's notice board, it's just the text of the notice board. So if I wanted to edit something about that, I could just jump straight here, edit it, and I, you know, save it, and I'm done. I don't even have to go to the normal LAMS authoring environment. So something that might have taken about 6 to 8 clicks before now takes sort of one click because you just change the text there. And different tools have got different little sort of summary things. So if I take share resources here, we've just got, you know, a little list of, you know, in this case it's a website, but if you wanted to add a it's a file. If you don't want to add a website, you just add an extra website. So try to sort of get it down to the, it's like the essence of each tool within LAMS and allow for simple editing of that. Okay. All right, so that's what we're up to. Lessonlams.com is the website. It is actually up and running at the moment, but there's quite a lot we haven't done with it. A lot of the image bits don't quite work, and there's bugs and things. Yeah, so there's quite a bit of polishing to go. So I wouldn't consider this kind of like a full official launch, but for those of you who are interested in it, keep an eye on that website, and you know, you can play with it from today, but we'll sort of be polishing it up a bit more over the next couple of weeks, maybe month, and I expect it should be, you know, quite usable, you know, generally in the near future. All right, so that's a bit about Lesson Labs and also this sort of embed feature that we're working on, and equally the embed feature, you know, it doesn't have the image yet, but we'll get that done soon, and you know, a few other things. For my mind, there's too much text here at the moment. All this stuff I'd get rid of. I just have the picture of the sequence, and straight underneath it, I'd have these options to jump into things. And if you want the text, you could open it up or something. So we'll keep sort of refining it, but that's a bit of what we're working on at the moment. And the goal, as I said, is sort of to try and reach a new audience of people who haven't really tried learning design yet, where if we can make it as simple as possible to sort of just get up and running, will that then lead to more exploration, more adoption? All right. Okay. So just another very brief thing. In the published papers for this conference, there's a longish paper from me about visualization and LAMS. And I'm not going to talk about it in this presentation because the paper pretty much says everything in it. But in the past, a number of people who've built other learning design systems have wondered why LAMS kind of simplified some of the concepts of learning design or didn't provide all the possible features that might have been initially hoped for by people who built IMS Learning Design and so on. And it's essentially that we made a number of commitments right up front when we built LAMS about the way we thought a system should work, such as that teachers should never have to see the XML. We should always hide that. It's all there in the background, but hide it from the teacher experience. We wanted this visual flow that you've all seen. We also only wanted to permit people to author designs that we knew could run in the system. We sort of actually kind of did it backwards. We said, what can the system actually run? And then let's create an authoring environment that sort of only lets you build those possible things. Whereas a lot of the work in other areas has been, what could we conceivably author, which is a very rich, and complex environment, and then whether a runtime or engine or system could deliver that might be sort of up in the air. We kind of came at it the other way. And also we wanted to make sure the activity tools and that were all ready to run as well. If you said, I want a chat, we wanted to know that LAMS would give you a running chat there and then. So those were some of our assumptions. I suppose really just for historical purposes, I note that because that meant LAMS necessarily simplified some learning design concepts to get to where it was, whereas others have gone with some of the more sophisticated potential of the design, but it's been then even more difficult to build systems that could fully implement that. Anyway, if that's of any interest, there's a paper that sort of goes into that. What I really want to talk about is a cooking lesson and how that might teach us something about advice in activity planners or pedagogic planners. My wife and I were at a little op shop a while ago, and we came across this 1930s French cookbook, and it had this outstanding looking recipe in it. The things around the outside, they're actual oranges that have been hollowed out. This thing in the middle is a sugar blown fake orange. And so I remember when we saw this, all the leaves, that's an almond paste that's been made to create the leaves, and also these little tulip things underneath made out of an almond paste. So we sort of thought, my, that would take really some skill, wouldn't it, to produce that? Well, let me show you the recipe for this. I'm sorry, it's down at the bottom. But you cut off tops of oranges, empty and remove the juice to make the orange ice cream. Clean the skins and tops and decorate with the almond paste stems and leaves coloured green. Place the blown sugar orange on a large lotus flower and fill with petit fours. Arrange oranges filled with the ice cream all round, each on a small lettuce flower, and put tops back on oranges. That's it.
Easy.
And at least for me, given my interest in lean design, I thought, that's interesting. I wonder if some teachers look at some of the advice we provide sometimes and have an experience, at least that I had reading that, of, okay, I've read your instructions, but I have no idea how to reproduce that meal. And this problem of, if you're an expert French cook with many years' experience, that might be quite sufficient. You'd already know how to do all those things, and that would be enough. But for the inexpert cook, this would be insufficient to sort of show you what might need to know. So I want to use this to talk about what I think are the many different kinds of advice we can give to teachers in the context of pedagogic planners and so on, and just what a complicated field it is. And I'm sort of very much in sympathy with Liz and Diana this morning talking about just how complex the issues we're trying to deal with. So, apart from a runnable learning design file, so whether it's a LAMS file or an IMSLD XML, that bit of learning design, sort of wrapped around that, we've been thinking about what advice we could give to a teacher about using this learning design. And it seems to me there are a lot of different kinds of advice we could give. One of them is sort of about how you develop whole courses, whole degrees or degree courses, how the structure of them works. And in that context, then how this particular design might fit in. So that's one kind of advice. Another one is more down, if you're looking at the design itself, how you might change it for another purpose. You know, how you might use the what is greatness sequence of the past names for what is jazz. Or how you might take even just a particular sequence and adapt it to, you know, a slightly different implementation. At another level, I think we can go right down inside individual tasks in a learning design and talk about advice for those. So if you were writing a question that students were going to have to answer, you could talk about sort of the phrasing of the question. How do you write a good open question rather than one that, you know, you get lots of yes and no answers to? So there's a kind of almost micro-level sort of advice that you can imagine there. I think we can also talk about advice where it would be the sort of advice you'd give someone who's trying to rapidly adopt something and use it. I often talk about the school teacher on a Sunday night who just needs something for the class on Monday morning and wants to go with it. And how that advice would be quite different to someone who's doing a major course redevelopment, you know, a whole rethinking of a course or even a degree, say in medical contexts, where medical faculty have gone from a traditional lecture-based process to using problem-based learning throughout their whole medical degree and have taken maybe a year or two to do a complete redesign. Well, there's a kind of advice you might give them about, you know, problem-based learning and so on that would be different to what you give to the Sunday night teacher. I think there's also a lot of advice we could give about the pedagogical theories that are behind a particular design. If this is a problem-based learning design, we could give advice about, you know, problem-based learning, why it works as an approach, what its theoretical underpinnings are, you know, all of the sort of rationale for that particular choice of theory. If we switch to disciplines, I think one of the things that many of our, you know, discipline lecturers actually think about most in design is how does this bit of the topic interconnect with other bits, and why would I present this bit here and not later or sooner? You know, I used to teach introductory psychology, and so I think a lot about, you know, when should I introduce this part of the course relative to that part of the course, and if this is a particularly difficult part, do I need to hold it to later, and so on. So there's a lot that your sort of discipline lecturer will think about inside their discipline, quite apart from the more generic designs that we might talk about at, you know, say problem-based learning and so on. I think there's all sorts of issues about practical management of running a design, you know, which students get allocated to which groups and how long does it take. We were talking a bit earlier on about elapsed time and, you know, how long people, all those sort of things. And even we can go down to another level of details when you're running a design where it's got a discussion forum, you can potentially imagine giving advice to someone about how to facilitate the forum, you know, what sort of topics they should draw students out on, what maybe mistakes or incorrect ideas they might pursue in the forum that you need to watch out for and how to sort of guide them back. So, I mean, it's a bewildering array of types of advice we might give in relation to a learning design. And, of course, within all of that, we could be giving brief advice or very detailed advice. And so it seems to me quite a challenge that we have to think, how do we assist the teacher to be effective in taking up a design and using it in their teaching? So what I thought I might do is do a quick run over a number of the major projects in this area from this perspective of types of advice. And I'll show a bit of the LAMS activity planner in doing that and talk about some of my disasters and less disasters in running that. And I'm going to have a go at the end, and I'm still not sure how valuable this, but I want to try and kind of map them out on a more general theoretical model to see if it might help us think a bit about types of advice and how they would help us. So I pinched some screenshots from Diana from a recent presentation about the LDSE and the previous work on the London Planner. And you've seen already today sort of the sophistication that offers at the levels of sort of designing modules and sessions and what to think about there. I think we saw earlier the time graphs and how, you know, different types of activities spread both over time and across different types of learning, acquisition, inquiry, discussion. And where'd it go? There, lots of, but also things like mapping of learning aims and learning outcomes and how that also then maps onto the time and the overall course design. So I'm not going to be able to do anything like justice to the richness of that work, but to me it's one example of an attempt to provide advice to lecturers, to teachers, to help them think about their courses, about trying new teaching, about, you know, redesigning what they do. We can also look at the other input to that, Liz's work on Phoebe, and look back to the way that Phoebe provided advice on a whole bunch of different sort of topics of things you might want to consider in working, you know, with a learning design. And, you know, particularly sort of these, I really like these sections where there'd sort of be a general type of teaching, and then you can see in the bottom right corner, technologies that might suit the sort of teaching you're doing. So you're trying to get students to debate, well, what technologies might suit that. And then you could drill down even further. Here we go. So here's an example of collaborative learning and taking, say, discussion forums as an example. And if you drill down further, I haven't got it here. Even details about how to run discussion forums and why they work and literature to support that. So another kind of advice to help people with learning designs, particularly around particular tools and how they might fit in. If I can give another example, many of you may know from the past a large learning design project that was run in Australia, the AUTC learning design project that a number of colleagues from the University of Wollongong and others around Australia worked on. And they also put together a sort of set of advice to go with learning designs, and I've just captured a few of it. Bits here, they would have sort of some information about the background to it, who is involved. I've just picked a jigsaw example here. And then the designers, the people who use this, would write their own summary, sort of what it means to them, why they use this technique. It was quite a personal sort of description of the approach. They then had this model where there were sequences, tasks, resources, and supports, and they could go through and comment on how to piece together the bits of the design. And if you've never seen it before, this quite sophisticated model of the components of a learning design framed in terms of the resources, the tasks, and the supports for those that sort of went together into a kind of flow or sequence. And so detailed little bits of advice about what to do at certain steps, you know, in this case, how to set WebCT up to do something and, you know, what to comment on in the forum. And they also provided quite rich supporting materials. So there was notes on sort of background pedagogy. So if this was a jigsaw, you know, what is a jigsaw? Where did it come from? Why was it considered an appropriate design? You know, references to the literature and even a history of this design, how they evolved it in their own teaching context and use it and so on. So quite a rich set of advice and I suppose history about a learning design. Just going to LAMS, within the LAMS community, we provided this quite short format for people to fill in about a sequence that they were sharing, sort of touching on things like the audience, how long it would take to run it, and a little summary of the activities and how long that would go. And generally, these are quite brief in the LAMS community, but we did, in a few cases, do more detailed ones, and this is one that you can find in the LAMS community where we really went into detail of sort of, in this case it was a K-12 example, so what learning objectives does it map against within the wider curriculum, and then for the lesson outline, a sort of step-by-step each activity and discussed what was in it and why it was there and how you might use it. So just a slightly more detailed version to go with the LAMS sequence. Another area that we've been sort of bumping up against in learning design is the patterns area and educational patterns. And while these aren't sort of running designs, I think they bear enough commonality with us to be worth exploring. And so this is a representation of a pattern about collaborative evaluation. It's got a particular structure that patterns require, and sort of they outline a context, they describe the challenge, and then they offer a solution. And one of the key ideas to patterns is, in fact, that you don't hand someone a kind of running sequence, that rather it is always up to you as the teacher to take this information and turn it into the specific implementation you'll use in your course. What's called in the pattern literature the creative leap, that you take sort of a good general idea and then contextualise it to a specific thing you run in your course. And so a while ago, Patrick McAndrew from the Open University, Peter Goodyear, now at University of Sydney, and myself did a bit of work on this, and that's from an article. And one of the things we looked at was, because we didn't always want to have the creative leap, we wanted to say, well, could you describe the pattern and then at least offer an example of a learning design that might go with that? So obviously, you could try and change it. And so we looked at sort of trying to structure some pattern-style advice and then adding to that a specific sequence. This is from that particular paper. And if I go one step further, we suggested, in fact, we can imagine lots of patterns. Well, if we take one pattern, a particular good idea for teaching, we could then have many learning designs based on that, and they could be of all different kinds. There could be a GLM learning design, there could be a LAMS learning design, there could be a compendium LD learning design. But all those learning designs might be based on this overarching conceptual pattern or sort of good idea of teaching. And then you could have libraries of those. So you could have, you know, 10, 20, 30 patterns, each one having a number of implementation models within it. And so the pattern provides sort of the advice on a good teaching idea, which is then represented in a few implementation formats. So there's another sort of crack at this problem of providing advice. So having said all that, now let me just briefly show you a bit of what we've been trying in the LAMS Activity Planner, and then I'll see if I can pull this together a bit. If you're not familiar with the LAMS Activity Planner, is a new system we've sort of built above LAMS with the ability to have a suite of templates or good activities that people can choose from, and this new simplified editor, I showed it briefly, where you just have the text boxes. So rather than traditional LAMS, when the teacher opens up LAMS for the first time, it's kind of blank and they have to then think up what they do. The Activity Planner is an attempt to say, well, here's a suite of, you know, good activities you might choose from and then edit and apply to your course. And I should say that we've decided that we're going to license that software commercially, that is, you know, pay for licenses, partly as a way to try and help us then keep doing the open source development of the main LAMS platform. So if you haven't heard that before, we announced that about 6 months ago. And the planner's got one extra feature that would be of interest to this audience, but perhaps not to so many typical teachers, is there is an editor for the planner itself. So if I build a planner and, you know, showed it to you and you said, oh, James, I don't like your templates and I don't like your advice. If I were doing this, I'd set it up differently. I'd have this different advice. I'd have different templates. Then you can actually do that. You can take the planner software and create your own sequences in LAMS and upload them as templates and then type in your own advice. And there's no technical skill required to do it. So any of you in this room should be able to use the same kind of just web-based forms to create a whole library of sequences and an advice process to go with that. So I'll just point this out. This is from the editor from the planner, and I won't show it again because I'll be showing real examples. But I can basically set up a section of the planner. That's what the title is, a brief description of that section, and then it can have detailed text and even images of sequences you can sort of see there. And then I upload the file I built in LAMS that is the template to go with that. And then I can sort of build as many nodes cascading down as much as I like using this interface. So let me show you some examples that will hopefully make it a bit clearer. So this is a screenshot from the Activity Planner, and we set up a section that we call Teaching Strategies. This is work I've done a lot with Leanne Cameron. And so we went and looked at some of the, you know, typical kind of teaching strategies we know about. Problem-based learning, predict, observe, explain, role plays, web quests. And we tried to put together a sort of standard template for each of those that we could allow people to have a look at. So they would come into the planner and they get these very short descriptions in this case. And we've toyed at times with a why would I use this, which might jump off to Phoebe or, you know, another place to provide sort of more background knowledge. But let's say, for example, that as a teacher you go and say, well, I might look at this role play thing. What's that look like? So you click on that. And so you sort of go one step down in the planner. And then at this point, I've typed in some text about, you know, what's a typical role play? What are the phases of it? How does it work? We've tried many different amounts of text, and that's about the maximum we've found that people will tolerate, but that's as quick a summary of a role play as I can sort of give. And then we've tried many different versions of the templates, and I'll show you a few in a moment, but the one we've settled on for now is we show one sort of worked example, so a template fully built with content in it that illustrates the approach, and then a generic template version of that same one. So in this case, we've got an interactive whiteboards role play where people are teachers in a typical school, they're considering adopting whiteboards. This is a teacher ed kind of sequence, and we split them into two roles, those who are, you know, in favour of the whiteboards versus those who are against them or think there's problems. And so if I have a look at that, this is then the detail of that specific sequence, some advice about how to run it and how it works, the screenshot of that sequence in LAMS, and then from there you can jump into, as you can see at the top, a preview of it, the learner view, so see exactly how it looks to students, or the editor, which is this new sort of simplified editor that would allow you to use it. So there, that's a screenshot of the simplified editor. And so the idea is that a teacher can come in, choose a general category, teaching strategies, see a number of strategies, say, oh yes, maybe I'll try role play, get to this point, and be at the point of editing a role play within, you know, I don't know, 5 minutes or something. And then once they've edited it, that's ready to run. They can run that straight away in a course. One other thing we did with that is added this thing down here we call editing advice. And so this is sort of micro-level advice. So advice on this particular activity and how you might choose to edit it. So in this particular case, this role play, we actually managed to phrase all the text in the role play to be generic for every activity except for one, which was the scenario of the role play. So every other step in the role play actually just refers generically to, are you in favour of the idea or against the idea? Now come together and debate the idea. So, you know, it's sort of, you can always change that text to make it specific, but we managed to do a kind of generic phrasing of it. And so the only thing a teacher has to do to use this generic role play in their own course is write a scenario into this text box. That's all that they have to do. And so what we then thought is, can we give them some advice about how to write a good scenario? So we've got this little box that can pop up if they like, which I said, here are the things to keep in mind when you're writing a scenario, what's important, how to phrase it, issues like that. And again, the text in that box is also something you edit in LAMS. So if you were creating your own templates for your own planner, you would decide what advice you'd give, if any, to people about, you know, what to do at that step. So that's the basic structure. So let me just briefly tell you about some of the disasters I had of it, because this is the end of the process of what you saw. One of them was when I was doing a predict, observe, explain one, I thought, all right, we'll provide some concrete examples. Here's one about dropping a hammer and a feather next to each other on the moon. We had this great bit of video. And some generic examples to go with that. So you can see this sort of concrete example and generic one. But if you go into those, I then tried to do all sorts of sort of slight variants of how it might go. So a basic version, a version with offline discussion, a version with questions in groups of three, a version with online discussion and whole class questions, and a final forum at the end of it. And I kept sort of taking the design, just adding little bits onto it with a hope that, you know, a teacher comes into this, might look at one design, then go, oh no, but I wanted this bit extra, and they'd sort of look through all these others. Now, this may not be a terrible idea, but it didn't go down well with the initial student tests. It just felt overwhelming to the students who were looking at it. And as we talked about it, they're saying, look, you know what? Just give me one good example. I'll look at that, and then if I really feel I need to edit it or something, I'll work out how to do that later. They can always open these designs into LAMS full authoring and play with it. So it's not that they needed lots of variants to get the idea. They actually just wanted, you know, one example. And so then on a separate page, I had all these, you know, template versions of that with all these different versions. Yeah. So that was one thing that didn't work out so well. Another one, I had a go at doing a thing about introducing new ideas. I had in mind here sequences to accompany lectures. So things you might run just before a lecture with a couple of small tasks that would give you some sort of ammunition as a lecturer you could talk about in the lecture. You know, many students said this or had this opinion. And then I thought, well, what are all the different types of things you might try? And I put together sort of different, in a sense, education ideas. You know, you might want to try and identify misconceptions or review a resource or get students to reflect or relate it to contemporary events or get them to respond to a provocative idea or bias and all sorts of things, none of which were a bad idea. But we did this. And then within each one of those, I designed all sorts of different things. One that had three open questions, one where they voted three different times, one where they had voting and open questions, one where it reversed the order of all these. And again, the student reaction to this was, it's just too much. Thinking here of sort of teachers ed students at a master's level course where I trialled this. And again, there was nothing wrong with the ideas, but it was somehow overwhelming. Too many steps, too much text, too many options. And so that didn't seem to work out. Oh yes, no, and I even went further. I had a complete detailed discussion of every activity in the sequence. So they could see every single step and why it was there and what they might choose to change and everything. It's too much for them. Another one that we've only done a little bit of, and I think this has got some promise, is using videos inside the design. So having a video of a teacher talking about something that they might try. And also in this one we had a book where the ideas were drawn from a book so that you could sort of read the book for the detailed view, and then there was sort of, you know, specific designs just within the sequence. And I'll mention that one briefly in a moment. Another one, just for completeness, is also looking at discipline-based ones. So I used to teach introductory psychology, and so I worked out, here are the classic topics from introductory psychology. Could I build a couple of sequences for each sort of chapter for a textbook, if you think of it in that way? so that the lecturer can say, I'm teaching sensation this week. Here's the three classic topics I teach in sensation. Pick one of those and be ready to run. So I think that's another angle that we could come at for this. It's some examples from the psychology one. All right. So I'm conscious of time, so let me just race through this to wrap up. I think we've got lots of different types of advice. One of them is about sort of levels of granularity, whether it's advice in terms of the whole degree structure or a whole course structure, down to the module or week or class level, even down to the individual task. Remember the phrasing of the open question. So I think that's one type of advice. We've got all sorts of practical advice, you know, how do you use the editing tool and how do you set up the text to go and things, and also practical implementation advice, you know, how many people to put in groups, how long should it take. So there's all sorts of just how to run stuff, how to edit stuff. There's all sorts of pedagogical advice, you know, which theory are you using, why are you using that theory, what does that theory inform about what you're doing. And I think there's some areas here we're getting quite close to some of the work on TPACK that's been coming out of the US, of looking at combinations of technological, pedagogical and content knowledge together, or subsets of that, as, you know, a contributor. And then there's also the sort of pedagogical advice about facilitation. You know, how can you be effective as a teacher facilitating a forum? Well, that's another type of advice. And then there's all sorts of ways that advice will vary with context and time. So an expert teacher may have different advice to a novice teacher. If you think back to my orange example from the beginning. The teacher who's got a lot of time may want different advice from the teacher who's got hardly any time. And even there may be certain advice that teachers are just not ready to hear until they've had a certain experience in the classroom. Until something's gone dreadfully wrong, you may not be able to convey to them why something may be a good idea. So there's a kind of professional development angle as well. So how would you put all this together? There's a part of me that says, I don't know. It really does seem very hard. But let me show you at least one quick crack at doing that. And I'm going to make these assumptions. The practical advice, I think we're always going to need that, but it doesn't contribute very much to theory. You know, it just sits there and we need it. So I'm going to put that to one side. The discipline advice, you know, the advice inside your particular discipline, like psychology, I think is very important, and it's very important to many of our experts. But it doesn't generalise very well. And the thing that we're most after in learning design is, you know, generalisable pedagogies and so on. So again, I think it's very important, but I'm going to put it to one side. And I think the issues about authoring advice versus implementation advice are, again, both very important. I'm going to put implementation advice to one side and just talk about the authoring advice, trying something new. And within that, I think that there are two things that we can draw out. One is granularity, so at what level of detail are we talking? And the other one is time, and by time I mean sort of time-poor teachers versus time-rich teachers. You know, if you have a lot of time, you might have one sort of advice compared to if you didn't have much time at all. I then think that the pedagogical theory issue, which theory are you using and why, is an orthogonal, a completely separate kind of question, and I can't unpack that one today, but I can overlay it on the model I'm going to show you just at least in one way. So here's my attempt. I think running from top to bottom is this kind of granularity idea, so we can go all the way up to whole of institutions and the way they design courses, down to classes, down to individual tasks. And then running the other way, I'm trying to imagine a teacher where at one end is incredibly time poor, they've got almost no time for advice and reflection, compared to the one who's got a lot of time. And then I sort of acknowledge those other types of advice, they will be relevant too, but I can't easily place them here. So now, and I hope I'm not going to offend every great project that I love by doing this, but I'm going to try and map some of the major projects onto here to try and give a sense of how they might differ within these. So,
well, we're ready.
Okay. So if I think of the London Planner, and this is certainly the more historical work, it may be true of the LDSC, the most recent work, but I don't know it as well. But I think of the London Planner as being more up the time-rich end and more at the level of courses, and it does sort of go up to higher levels, and it does touch down to class and weeks. I know that's part of the goal. But if I was to try and give a sense of where it's at in this, that's my rough sense of it. Let me keep going because you'll start to see where some of the others sit. If you take Phoebe, my sense is Phoebe is much more down at the practical, how do I do a thing for this class? How do I use a discussion forum? And the advice, I mean, it's got some level of detail in it, but it's not as demanding, to me at least, as, say, the London Planner is in terms of the whole process. You can just grab discussion forum, have a bit of a read, and then you can be done in that terms of using Phoebe. The other use of Phoebe, where you have the text panel where you can edit and make notes on your whole course and how you design, that to me would be much closer up to the top right. I think the AUTC learning design project for me is sort of in about this area. It wasn't so much at the level of whole courses and institutions. It was more down at, you know, something you would run for a week or a class. But its expectation was fairly time-rich. There was quite a lot to read and digest and think about before you might run something. I think CloudWorks, the interesting work that Gronje and colleagues have been doing at the Open University, I think of as being up this end, that it tends to be a lot of very brief information, but it stretches over quite a wide range. Some of it is right up to sort of course design issues, feels to me more mostly at the class level. It's also got some great little tasks that CloudWorks share. Yeah, here's a good idea for doing this. And although the discussions within CloudWorks could certainly become something for the time rich to read at great length, the idea of an individual cloud to me is, I think, up the more compact end that would suit a time poor teacher. For LAMS, if we take the sort of example I showed you a moment ago with the role play one, to me, I think it is sort of like the quick activity planner, and it's in about this area in that you can read up on a bit more if you like, but it's mostly down the time poor end. And if I can add to that, that little editing advice box that was in the editor is right down in the sort of time poor, very micro level sort of advice. But that's only one way of designing the LAMS activity planner. That, you know, some of my other attempts, these more thorough, more detailed ones, to me are sort of more up at this end. And to be honest, they would, you know, at least so far, not very successful. I can also imagine an activity planner, where I haven't done this, that you might create for a whole medical school that was moving to problem-based learning. And it might be a very, you know, detailed plan with a lot of information about problem-based learning, and it might stretch all the way from whole of course design structures down to even the small tasks week to week. So it you know, might take up something like that space, but it would be quite a lot of work to build that planner and all of the activity, the templates that would go with it. If I take just PBL for a moment, and I said that I think particular pedagogical theories are orthogonal to this, they're another set of problems. But even PBL itself, you can imagine in different cases. So there's the little PBL in the activity planner for LAMS, where you just read half a page about it, you get a template, and you're ready to use it in, you know, a quarter of an hour. But you could do the PBL more like the AUTC Learning Design Project, where there were, you know, four, five, six pages of theory and background and text and so on. And we can even imagine this medical PBL where it's designing an entire degree to be PBL-based, not just 1 week or, you know, a few weeks. And one that's been on my mind a lot, and this is something I hope to do in the coming year, is a kind of hybrid where you might write a book that has chapters, which each chapter is kind of what is PBL, why might you consider it, what's it like to run it, and so on. And that would be sort of a bit more detailed. But then with it, you would have some specific designs that themselves would be very quick to run. And it's somehow the combination of those, partly the physical book, partly a much briefer online experience, whether that might work, whether that might be the right hybrid for, again, the sort of busy teacher who always comes to mind for me. And you might have noticed that the top right got very little out of all of that. And it worries me, but there's a part of me that suspects that the top right is actually what most universities and lecturers do most of the time. They set major structures that affect the whole way that courses and degrees are set, but potentially without a great deal of reflection on whether that's the most effective option, certainly from a teaching and learning point. I mean, you might have to do it because of time and cost and facilities, but you know, if we thought deeply about teaching and learning issues, we might do things quite differently. Well, most universities all kind of do the same sort of things. And you know, the exceptions, like a whole medical degree moving to problem-based learning, are quite rare. I mean, it's happened a bit in medicine, but you know, not so much. So I'm not sure, but I feel like that might be where much of our universities actually live, is in that sort of top right corner. All right, so let me wrap this up. Does this help us? That will be for you to decide, but I wonder if it helps us sort of acknowledge different kinds of advice and how they might connect. And when it comes to systems, different systems are trying to achieve different kinds of advice because they're making assumptions about, you know, the amount of time or the amount of granularity that people have. I'm also wondering, this might help us to notice when certain types of advice are missing. You know, certainly the LAMS activity planner has got almost nothing about course design and course structures. And so the teacher who was looking for that kind of deep reflective process about redesigning a course it's completely absent from the LAMS activity planner. So you might want to refer them to the London planner or something else to fill out that gap. Also, for me, there's possibility, this might tell us about handoff between systems. You know, one system might set its goal as, I'm going to do this area of advice. And once you've digested all those thoughts, now I'm ready to hand you across to some other system that will then do maybe some more micro or, you know, sort of smaller level advice. And lastly, the reason I did all of this was because in the back of my mind, since we started building planners, I've had this sense of what's the most effective advice. You know, there's all sorts of types of advice we could give teachers, but if our ultimate goal is to give teachers some sort of advice which helps them be more effective in their teaching and learning, then which advice is most effective? Is it better to do the quick and dirty advice and hope they'll come back later and learn more? Or is it better to offer very rich advice, even though some people might find it too much? I don't think we know any of the answers to that, but it seems to me that's a kind of empirical research question. And at least now with the LAMS activity planner, anyone could build their own planner with its own assumptions about how much information, how the sequences are provided and so on. And then you might be able to do some research on the differences that come out of that. So I'm conscious I've gone over on time. I'm sorry for that. But I want to just get to that end point of, I feel like we could now start to ask some empirical questions about types of advice, you know, when the advice comes, for which types of people, and start to even try and work out, yes, there is a very big universe of advice we might provide, but if we were to hone in on one or two areas, what, which would they be? Which of them are most helpful? So I'll leave it at that point. Thank you, everyone, again, for coming to join us. And I have two gifts here for our keynote speakers. I'll give them out in a moment. But otherwise, Leanne, any admin, dinner and things?
Yes, for those people who will be joining us for dinner, it's...